We're waiting for big banks to say they made big money this spring. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. Over the next few days, the country's biggest banks will report earnings for the most recent quarter. J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo on Friday, Goldman Sachs on Monday. Analysts are expecting a strong showing this time around, Marketplace's Justin Ho reports.
One reason bank profits could look strong, a red-hot job market. Chris Zaccarelli with the Independent Advisor Alliance says banks could benefit from improving employment data.
This provides an opportunity for people who have stable employment to actually go out and get a mortgage if they haven't had one already.
Or pay off the mortgages they already have. Karen Petru at Federal Financial Analytics says rising interest rates are helping banks take in a little more on their loans. And overall, she says banks are profiting from a changing business model.
It's increasingly a different business, and that's one of the reasons profitability has recovered.
That's because ever since the financial crisis, banks have been getting into higher margin businesses like trading and wealth management. That also means bank earnings aren't the measure of the economy they once were.
The economy can't grow based on big bank lending the way it used to.
These days, more of our assets are held by non-bank financial institutions like BlackRock. It reports earnings Monday. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Inflation edged up in June, according to the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index out this morning. Gas prices went up, clothing prices fell. It all added up to about a tenth of a percent increase in prices. Over 12 months through June, the CPI is up 2.9%. That's the biggest 12-month increase since 2012. Now, when investors decide to park money with the government, as in when they consider buying U.S. Treasury bonds, they have options. They can lend the government money for a short period or a long period, maybe a couple years, maybe 10 years. And usually, if they're going to tie their money up for a longer period of time, they demand a higher return. And you can imagine why. A lot can happen in 10 years, so you want to be compensated. But sometimes something strange happens. Sometimes we get what's called an inverted yield curve, which just means investors are asking for higher returns for lending the government money in the short term. Why are we bringing this up? Well, Marketplace's Erica Barris joins us from WESA in Pittsburgh. Erica, why do we care when investors start asking for higher returns in the short term?
Well, because it's a sign of a recession, and Morgan Stanley predicts it's going to happen in the next year. Almost every time the yield curve has inverted like this, a recession's followed in the next year or two. The spread between the 10-year Treasury bond yield and the 2-year has been flattening this year. The Fed has been raising short-term interest rates lately, pushing those two rates closer and closer. Morgan Stanley says this inversion could come as early as next March.
Well, you know, the Federal Reserve has in the past used the yield curve as an indicator for what it should do. So what is it saying about this move?
So there's some debate among economists about whether the yield curve should have as much weight as it does when it comes to predicting recessions. And this was actually a hot topic during the last Fed meeting in June. The Fed heard presentations on some other possible indicators that there could be recession warning signs. Instead of the difference between the 10-year and 2-year bond yields, economists suggested the difference between 3-month and 18-month bonds could be better. That measure isn't showing as much risk as the traditional yield curve right now. But some Fed policymakers still see the yield curve as an important metric, so we'll keep paying attention to it.
All right, Marketplace's Erica Barris, thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
The ice cream market is grappling with some serious pressure. Yes, even now, in the midst of summer, the industry is adapting to a seismic shift in the price of vanilla, the flavor derived from the pods of an exotic orchid. Minnesota Public Radio's Mike Moen has more.
On a picture-perfect early summer evening, the scene inside the Big Dipper, an ice cream shop north of Minneapolis, is about what you would expect. Busy. This place isn't short on flavors. Just ask these little leaguers feasting on their selections.
Like a Kit Kat. Birthday cake.
I had s'mores.
And while customers indulge in their favorite flavors, there is something they might not be aware of. That is the cost of a key ingredient found in many ice cream concoctions. Vanilla bean prices have been running the equivalent of about $1,000 to $1,200 per pound. That's nearly five times what it cost a few years ago. Industry analysts say a key factor is last year's cyclone in Madagascar, which created a huge crop shortage.
Madagascar supplies about 80% of the world's vanilla.
That's Brian Todd with the Food Institute blog.
And with prices skyrocketing over the past few years, it certainly has impacted supplies of vanilla.
Todd notes that overall, the ingredients used to make ice cream account for less than 25% of the finished product. Other factors like transportation, packaging, and marketing take up the other 75%. Big Dipper owner Tyler Guss says, fortunately, the higher cost of vanilla is something he's been able to shield from his customers.
You guys use quality ingredients. You know, you have problems with it price-wise, but you just got to deal with it.
Bigger players in the ice cream world like Kemp's, a top-selling brand in the upper Midwest, are having to make some adjustments.
The impact on the economics of the ice cream business is really significant.
Kemp's spokesperson Rachel Killow says the company relies heavily on the Madagascar bean. She says customers might see an extra 25 to 50 cents per gallon because of higher production costs. And while consumers might be able to stomach that increase because, hey, it's ice cream, those who sell it are hoping they won't be frozen out by current conditions. In St. Paul, I'm Mike Moen for Marketplace.
12 Thai boys and their soccer coach are still recuperating after their harrowing rescue from that flooded cave in Thailand. But movie producers are already on the ground. Pure Flix Entertainment produces Christian films. They're talking to participants in the rescue mission, though they haven't approached families of the hospitalized boys yet. The producers are not the only ones looking to bring the rescue story to the screen. Discovery has already scheduled a one-hour documentary special to air Friday. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.